Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a foundational case in how individuals can hold the government accountable. Stark v. Wickard, decided way back in 1944.
That's right.
Think of this as your shortcut to understanding a pivotal moment where the Supreme Court clarified who can challenge government actions, even when Congress hasn't explicitly paved the way for lawsuits. Our sources today include some podcast guidance for law students on this very case, a detailed case brief, and a standard legal brief.
Exactly. This case really boils down to a crucial principle.
Yeah.
If the government directly harms you financially by, you know, potentially overstepping its legal authority, you likely have the right to go to court, even if the specific law doesn't spell that out.
Right.
To grasp why this is so important, we really need to step back to the New Deal era.
Okay, let's unpack that backdrop. The 1930s and 40s saw this massive expansion of government regulation to combat the economic crisis. One key piece of legislation was the Agricultural Marketing Agreement Act, or AMA, of 1937. Mm. And Stark v. Wickard emerged from a specific order under this act, Order Number 4. What was the gist of that order?
Okay, so Order Number 4 zeroed in on regulating milk marketing, specifically in the greater Boston area. It established minimum prices that milk handlers and the companies buying the milk had to pay to the milk producers.
Okay.
However, and this is the crucial part, it also allowed for deductions from those minimum prices, particularly for payments channeled to cooperative associations.
Ah.
And these deductions directly reduced the income that the individual milk producers received.
So it wasn't just about a set price per gallon. These deductions meant the farmers were actually getting less money in their pockets. And understandably, they felt this was unfair and potentially illegal.
Precisely. They believed that the Secretary of Agriculture, who issued this order, had exceeded the authority granted to him by the AMAA. They felt like the government was essentially taking money that was rightfully theirs.
Yeah.
So they decided to take legal action, seeking an injunction.
An injunction, remind us.
Oh, right. An injunction is basically a court order that stops someone from doing something. In this case, they wanted to stop the deductions.
Got it. They wanted a court to order the Secretary of Agriculture to stop taking that money out. So what happened in the lower courts? Did they agree with the producers?
Unfortunately for the producers, no. Both the initial district court and then the Court of Appeals sided against them. Their reasoning came down to two main points.
Okay.
First, they argued that the producers lacked standing to sue. Think of standing as being the right person to bring a particular case to court. You need to have a direct and significant stake in the outcome. The lower courts felt the producers didn't meet that threshold.
Interesting.
Second, they pointed out that the AMAA itself didn't explicitly grant milk producers the right to challenge these types of administrative orders in court.
So the message from the lower courts was essentially, look, even if you're losing money because of this order, the law doesn't give you, the producer, the right to sue about it. That really sets the stage for the Supreme Court stepping in. What were the big legal questions the Supreme Court had to wrestle with?
Well, there were really two intertwined core questions.
Mm-hmm.
The first, as the lower courts highlighted, was about standing. Did these milk producers have a sufficient personal and direct injury that allowed them to bring this lawsuit, a real case or controversy?
Right, the direct stake.
Exactly. And the second, and perhaps more fundamentally important question for our understanding of government power, was whether the courts had the authority to review the Secretary of Agriculture's actions at all, given that the AMAA was silent on the matter of judicial review for producers.
Mm-hmm.
Could the judiciary act as a check on an administrative agency, even when Congress hadn't explicitly authorized such a check?
And what was the Supreme Court's ultimate answer to these critical questions?
In a landmark decision, the Supreme Court, in a majority opinion written by Justice Reed, answered a resounding yes to both. They firmly stated that the milk producers did have the standing to sue.
Okay.
Justice Reed reasoned that the producers had a clear and definite personal right to the minimum price established under the AMAA. The deductions directly impacted that right, causing them a direct financial harm.
Right, hitting them in the wallet.
Which provided the necessary stake in the controversy. Yeah.
That makes intuitive sense. If a government action is directly hitting your wallet, you should probably have the ability to challenge it in court. Now, what about that trickier issue of the AMAA not explicitly allowing for lawsuits by producers? How did the court navigate that silence?
This is where the case gets particularly interesting and why it remains so influential. The court declared that just because the AMAA didn't explicitly say producers could sue, that didn't automatically mean they couldn't. Justice Reed famously wrote, "When Congress creates rights, courts typically enforce, silence on review doesn't bar relief. In essence, the court established a presumption. When Congress grants rights to individuals, the expectation is that those individuals can seek judicial recourse if they believe those rights are being violated by government action.
Unless Congress clearly states otherwise.
Exactly. Unless Congress clearly states otherwise.
So the court is saying that Congress's silence isn't a no. It's more of a, well, we haven't said no, and generally, people can go to court to protect their rights.
Precisely. The court underscored the fundamental role of the judiciary in ensuring that administrative agencies, which are part of the executive branch, operate within the legal boundaries set by Congress. Justice Reed emphasized that determining the bounds of agency authority is a judicial function entrusted to courts by Congress.
That really speaks to the separation of powers, the idea that different branches of government have distinct roles, and the judiciary plays a crucial role in overseeing the executive branch.
Right. And Justice Reed even connected this back to the very foundation of American law, didn't he? To Marbury v. Madison.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. He drew a direct line to the constitutional role of courts established in Marbury v. Madison. That case, decided way back in 1803, established the principle of judicial review over actions of the legislative branch, Congress. Start v. Wickard essentially extended that core principle to the actions of administrative agencies within the executive branch. The court's power to hear cases and controversies under Article 3 of the Constitution includes situations where individuals claim they've been harmed by unlawful government action, regardless of which branch that action comes from.
So the majority opinion really laid down a marker emphasizing the importance of judicial oversight of government agencies, even when Congress hasn't explicitly spelled out the right to sue. But there was a dissenting opinion, wasn't there? What was Justice Frankfurter's argument?
Right. Justice Frankfurter strongly disagreed. His dissent focused on the idea that the AMAA should be seen as a comprehensive and self-contained regulatory system designed by Congress.
Self-contained.
Yeah, he argued that Congress had created specific mechanisms within the act itself, like administrative hearings and producer referendums, to address grievances and resolve disputes. In his view, these internal administrative remedies were the intended and exclusive way for producers to raise concerns, not through lawsuits in federal court.
So he believed that these built-in administrative processes were the only avenue for the milk producers to have their voices heard.
That's right. He felt that by creating a judicial remedy for the producers, the court was essentially overstepping its bounds and interfering with Congress's specific plan for managing these agricultural markets. He also made a point that the AMAA primarily regulated the milk handlers, the companies processing and distributing the milk, not the individual producers themselves.
Okay, that's an interesting distinction.
Therefore, he argued, the producers, as non-regulated parties under the Act, lacked a sufficient statutory basis to bring a lawsuit. He worried that allowing such suits would dislocate Congress's scheme. This idea of non-regulated parties is pretty key to his argument. He believed the Act was designed to control the handlers, and the producers' relationship wasn't direct enough to give them a right to sue under the Act itself.
It sounds like a really fundamental disagreement about how the courts should approach reviewing actions by administrative agencies and how much weight should be given to Congress's silence on the issue of judicial review.
Exactly. It really highlights that ongoing tension in administrative law, balancing the need to protect individuals from potentially overreaching government actions with the principle that courts should respect the regulatory frameworks Congress has put in place.
Yeah.
You know, not create remedies where Congress hasn't explicitly provided them.
So, looking beyond this specific case about milk prices in Boston in the 1940s, what's the long-term impact of Stark v. Wickard? Why is it still a crucial case for anyone studying law or interested in how our government functions today?
Well, Stark v. Wickard is foundational because it really established what we now call the presumption of judicial review in administrative law.
The presumption of review.
Yeah, this principle, which was further solidified in later important cases often called its progeny, cases like Abbott Labs v. Gardner, means that courts will generally assume that administrative actions are subject to judicial review unless Congress has clearly and explicitly stated that a particular type of action is not reviewable by the courts.
Wow, that's incredibly significant.
It really is. It acts as a vital check on the power of administrative agencies.
And it also significantly shaped our understanding of legal standing, right?
Absolutely. Stark v. Wickard strongly reinforces the idea that individuals who experience a direct financial harm as a result of government action have a sufficient stake in the controversy, the legal term for having standing to bring a lawsuit.
Right, the case or controversy requirement.
Exactly. This requirement of a direct and concrete injury, often financial, remains a cornerstone of standing doctrine in federal courts today. It helps ensure that courts are dealing with actual legal disputes, not just abstract grievances.
Can you give us a more contemporary sort of real-world example of how the principles of Stark v. Wickard still matter?
Sure. Let's think about environmental law. Imagine the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, issues a regulation that a manufacturing company believes goes beyond the authority Congress gave the EPA in, say, the Clean Water Act.
Okay.
And this regulation imposes significant costs on the company. Even if the Clean Water Act doesn't specifically list out every single type of EPA regulation that can be challenged in court.
Right.
The principles established in Stark v. Wickard suggest that the company would likely have legal standing to sue the EPA, arguing that the agency has exceeded its statutory authority and directly harmed them financially. The presumption of review kicks in.
Okay, that makes it clear. So Stark v. Wickard provided a fundamental answer to who can challenge government power and under what circumstances the courts can intervene. But it also seems to highlight a continuing tension in our legal system.
Definitely.
Given the increasing complexity of regulations and the specialized expertise of administrative agencies, how do we find the right balance? How do we ensure individuals can challenge potentially unlawful actions without totally overwhelming the courts or undermining the necessary expertise of these agencies?
That's precisely the enduring question, isn't it? Stark v. Wickard provided some crucial initial answers by establishing that presumption of judicial review and clarifying the standing requirements based on direct financial harm.
Mm-hmm.
However, the specifics of this balance, like how much deference courts should give to an agency's interpretation of its own authority, or what exactly constitutes a clear statement from Congress precluding judicial review, these are constantly being debated and reinterpreted in our legal system.
So the debate continues.
Absolutely. Stark v. Wickard was a pivotal moment in establishing the principle that administrative agencies are not above the law and that individuals have recourse when they believe those agencies have acted unlawfully. But the practical application of that principle remains a dynamic and really complex area of law. It's something every law student definitely needs to grapple with as they think about the role of the courts in our modern administrative state.